Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the final day of this public hearing. Ms. McNeill.
Good morning, Chair. Our final witnesses for this investigation will be heard together. We have Mr. David Bonehill, who has been recalled, having given evidence to us last week, and in the witness box with him is Mr. John Titchener. And can both witnesses please be sworn?
I do solemnly.
Sincerely and truly.
Declare and affirm.
That the evidence I shall give.
Shall be the truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
I swear by Almighty God.
That the evidence I shall give.
Shall be the truth.
The whole truth.
And nothing but the truth.
Thank you.
Good morning, both. Just to confirm, and for everybody listening to this evidence, Mr. David Bonehill, is it right that you are the UK Claims Director for the Ecclesiastical Insurance Group?
I am indeed.
And Mr. John Titchener, are you the Group Compliance Director of the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Mr. Bonehill, you have given the inquiry three witness statements, which we've previously been through and which have already been published on our website.
Yes.
I won't need to be taking you through them today. Mr. Titchener, you have provided a witness statement to this inquiry dated the 10th of July 2019. Is that correct?
It is.
And the reference for that is EIO 000150. And Chair, I'm going to ask that that be published in full on our website. Mr. Titchener, I should confirm that statement is endorsed with a statement of truth and signed by you. Did you confirm that the contents of that statement is true to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes, I did.
Thank you. I will throughout your evidence try and indicate to which of you I am addressing my questions, but if at any point you feel that one or the other of you would be better placed to answer it, please do just indicate and let us know. Okay? Mr. Bonehill, I'm going to start with you, just to refresh anyone's memory about the evidence given last week, or some of the evidence you gave last week.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we start, please? It's right, isn't it, that the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office was involved in the Church of England's response to a case brought by an individual we call A4?
It was.
And that the Church commissioned and published an independent review by Mr. Ian Elliott about the church's handling of that case.
Yes.
I'm going to ask Ralph to display at the same time two public statements made following the publication of that report. The first is at EIO 000139, page 4. Chair, that's in tab 5 of the bundle, and witnesses, that's at tab 5. At the same time, Ralph, can we have on screen EIO 000135 at page 2. And Chair, this one's at tab 6. Thank you very much, Ralph. So if we look on the left, we have a press statement issued by the Church of England, and it says, a spokeswoman for the Church of England said, advice was given to the bishop to cut off pastoral contact with the survivor because he had started legal actions. We now recognise that proper provision needs to be made for the pastoral needs of survivors in such circumstances. We therefore publish new guidance to that effect, etc., etc. On the right, we have a comment from the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office, and it's down towards the bottom of the page, which says, we agree with the broad thrust of the Elliott Review in promoting the needs of survivors and the importance of listening to them. But its assertion that Ecclesiastical instructed the Church of England to deny a survivor pastoral care is untrue. Unfortunately, we were not asked to participate in the review and so had no opportunity to provide the evidence that showed this. On the contrary, we have always been clear that pastoral care and counselling can and should continue in parallel with an insurance claim. Ms. Scolding, Queen's Counsel, asked you last week, and I think you agreed, that it could be said that there was a public disagreement between the Church and the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office in response to the Ian Elliott Review.
I think that's correct, and I think there was a misunderstanding Between the two parties in terms of the civil claim and the pastoral support.
Yeah. And we'll look at the detail of that during your evidence today. You were asked last time, and I'm not sure the answer was quite clear. Do you now accept that the EIO did not have sufficient regard in conducting this public debate about the Ian Elliott review, about the way that might affect A4, who was the victim overall?
That question was put to me last week, as you rightly say, and I think that that at the time I said that was a fair comment, and that is something that we would, if it would never happen again, but in the unlikely event it did, we would certainly put the victim at the heart of our response to these public questions.
Again, sticking with the chronology, Ralph, can we bring up ACE 027039 and page 38 of that? I don't need to go through in great detail with you.
Tab is this on?
This one's not in the tab, but it's only by way of setting out a bit of background.
Okay.
Is it right that prior to your giving evidence last week, this inquiry wrote to you through your solicitors to indicate that it wished to consider in full the correspondence between the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office and the Church in the response to the case of A4?
I believe that's correct.
And Ralph, can we go to page 38 of the document that's on screen and have a look at page 38? By way of demonstration, we can see towards the bottom of that page an email from a Michael Angel. Am I saying his name correctly?
Yes.
Dear Bishop Paul, thank you for your letter concerning A4. I've passed this to our specialist claims team who deal with such matters, and they'll be in contact. I look forward to seeing you at the national conference. Below that, Ralph, please. We can see LPP redacted, and there's various LPP redactions through that document. And Miss Golding took you through some of it last week, is
she
that
did,
right?
Yes.
And again, for anybody who's not a lawyer, I'm going to try and explain LPP in the simplest of terms. But in short, is it right that communications between lawyers and their clients generally would remain confidential, except for in certain exceptions, and that as it applies to this inquiry, it is open for the lawyer or the client to ask that we redact out privileged confidential information from documents before they are disclosed?
Well, I'm also not a lawyer, so I just make that point. It's probably, I don't know whether that one you could pick up, Johnny.
Yes, that is right.
And we'll talk about the circumstances in which that happened
here.
Can we look, before we move on to the transcript, is it right that as part of its consideration, the inquiry said, well, in these circumstances, would the EIO like to waive their privilege, to give us the permission to take off those redactions and disclose the advice given by the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office?
I understand so, yes.
Yes. And Mr. Titchener has accepted in his statement, of course, that we sent the same request to the Church of England, who indicated that insofar as the privilege was theirs, they would be willing to do that.
Yes.
Thank you. Miss Golding asked you, can we look at the transcript of Mr. Bonehill's evidence from the 2nd of July, and this is behind tab 4 in the bundle. I'd like to look at page 100, Ralph. It's on the bottom right of the page you have up. You can scroll down, Ralph. I'm trying to get to page 100. That's it. Don't worry, Ralph, it's internal. At the bottom, it's page 25 of the PDF.
Yes.
Thank you, Ralph. And do you see the bottom right square? Thank you very much. Miss Golding said, can you explain why you have chosen to continue with that, meaning the privilege? And your answer was, I think the difficulty is with legal privilege, you know, we need to be consistent in our approach. We can't and won't pick and choose what documents we choose to release and what we don't choose to release.
Yes.
I think the next sections may be better answered by you, Mr. Titchener. Following Mr. Bonehill's evidence to this inquiry, is it right that the complainant in this case, A4, provided this inquiry with two recordings of telephone calls between representatives from the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office and a member of the press?
Yes, I believe so.
From the wedding, the website Exaro, I understand the journalist was from. Is that
yes.
right? And the individuals on the telephone, who were they? I don't need their names, but their positions within the EIO.
The two individuals were the head of PR and comms and someone who worked in the PR and comms department at Ecclesiastical Insurance Office.
The telephone calls were dated the 22nd of June 2016, is that right?
Yes.
And the second was the 28th of June 2016?
Yes.
And Chair, there, just to, for the avoidance of doubt, there's a typo in Mr. Titchener's witness statement at paragraph 7, which says that the second call was the 28th of June 2018. That should read 16. I'm just going to play now, Ms. Titchener, just an extract of the second of those telephone calls, if we can. Ralph, it's at INQ004364, and I'd like to pick it up at 9 minutes into that recording. This is the telephone call between the comms team for EIO and the journalist for Exaro.
Yeah.
So, just to make this point then, the church's team were the first to offer what is in fact correct advice, and this is the church's team, that once a civil claim has been brought, the church shouldn't correspond with him directly.
Right. And this is the advice, this is the advice you're saying came from the church's legal team. Their solicitors,
No, they're in-house legal team, actually.
They're in-house legal team.
It was in-house or external, but it was their...
Yeah, but that was the legal view for the people who they were talking to, that that it should all go through the lawyers rather than any contact with Joe. So...
Yes, and that was, as I repeat, from the church's legal team, nothing to do with us.
Yeah.
On the 15th of January, church employees, including the legal team, were suggesting to Cheryl Kent that she contacted Ecclesiastical and another church team, which I won't bore you with the details of, to confirm the advice that the church's legal team had given.
Yeah.
On the 15th of January, Cheryl emailed these church colleagues saying that she hadn't been able to reach Ecclesiastical or the other church team by phone.
Yeah.
So she had sent emails to both and was awaiting a response. So we have corroboration that Cheryl couldn't reach us by phone, so she sent us an email.
Yeah.
On the 15th of January, she sent an email to us, and she asked the following, and I'm reading this to you just for background information.
Yeah.
I can't give this to you, it says, right?
Yeah, okay.
So this is what she asked. One of the national church lawyers has advised me that now this claim has been made, we should no longer respond to email / contact the alleged victim. Can I clarify what Ecclesiastical's viewpoint on this is, please?
Yeah.
So, two things are important here. First of all, we were asked to clarify advice that had been given by church lawyers.
Yeah.
Two, the question that was asked of both the church's legal team and of us was the wrong one. It was about ceasing contact with Joe, and it wasn't about ceasing pastoral care.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, we were asked, just to repeat, should we no longer respond to his emails or contact him?
Yeah.
And that was, the advice that was given by the church lawyers was correct. In response to the third, if I can just point out here for you, Tim, the advice that was given relates directly to the claim. You know, it's the process, legal process required for the claim.
Yeah.
And not regarding the pastoral care.
Yes, I see. Right, I understand. So you're separating out contact and pastoral care is two separate things, and I get what you're saying because
as we've already said to you, the claim whether an organisation is offering pastoral care or not has no impact on the outcome of the claim, and we've already given you all that detail.
Okay
So on the 16th of January we emailed Cheryl, that's Ecclesiastical, and we confirmed that the advice they had received from their legal team was correct.
Yeah.
That the church shouldn't be in any further contact with the claimant because he'd instructed solicitors to represent him on the claim. and the church of that protected. Yeah. I can read you out that email if you want.
Okay.
Or the relevant bit.
Yeah.
And this is on background as well, if I can find the relevant thing. Hold on, where are we going? So, thank you, etc. Here's the relevant part. The advice you have received is correct. You should not be in any further contact with the claimant, as he has now instructed solicitors to represent him as you anticipated he would. Yeah. So we're answering her question that with respect to the claim.
Yeah, but you, I can see where a misunderstanding might occur there, if you're saying, no, because you haven't mentioned pastoral care. Have you mentioned pastoral care in that email?
In that sentence, and indeed in the email, no, we haven't.
Because, I mean, I know if you get an email like that, you think, oh, pastoral care, I mean, contact with the person, pastoral care are sort of, would be, you know,
I'm asked by your legal representatives to correct a mistake that I made just for the avoidance of doubt. The first call was on the 22nd of June 2016 with Exaro. There was a second call on the 28th of June 2016, which was not recorded. And we've just listened to the third call, dated the 30th of June 2016, which was recorded. Is that right?
Yes.
During that telephone call, we've listened to an extract of, do we hear a representative from the PR team of Ecclesiastical Insurance Office providing to a member of the press the very advice that this inquiry asked you to allow us to disclose?
Yes, you hear the head of PR read out from an email.
Is it right that she reads out internal advice that was provided within the Church of England by their own lawyers, as well as advice provided by the EIO to the church?
She refers to legal advice
from
the in-house counsel of the church.
And you've accepted in paragraph 8 of your witness statement that the information that was read out was both confidential and subject to legal professional privilege. Is that right?
Yes.
And that privilege belonged not just to the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office, but to the church as well.
There was a common interest.
Yes. Did anybody from the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office contact the church before they provided the confidential material to the press?
As far as I'm aware, no.
Bearing in mind this call was by the PR team of Ecclesiastical Insurance Office, was the purpose of this telephone call to protect the reputation of the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office by managing the press response to the Elliott Review, or at least seeking to influence it?
As I understand it, the purpose of this call was to provide background or deep background to a journalist about those matters, yes.
Two questions arise from that. First of all, what is the relevance of background or deep background? Why does that matter when it's confidential information that's being provided?
Well, I'm not sure I know the answer to that myself. I think it was described as a practice that journalists have to brief using deep background.
And going back to my specific question, whether it's by way of background or deep background, was the purpose of providing this information to protect the reputation of the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office by influencing or managing the press reporting to the about the Elliott Review?
Well, clearly it was to provide information for the purpose of briefing a journalist about those matters, yes.
Okay. Is it right that you knew about this telephone call and the recording in September 2017?
Yes, it is right. We were sent the recording in September by A4.
So it would be right to say, wouldn't it, that at the time that the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office, as an organisation, declined to allow this inquiry to disclose that information unredacted, it knew that the PR team had already given it to the press?
Well, we had received the tapes in September 2017, and the request was made of us by the inquiry's legal team in June or July 2019, so that sometime afterwards, and I'm afraid that it just wasn't at the forefront of our minds that we had received those recordings.
Okay. Looking at your witness statement, Chair, it's paragraph 16 of the witness's statement at page 3. And what you say in relation to the inquiry's contact for a request to waive privilege is that, first of all, the EIO was aware that the church's position was already in the public domain. But most importantly, you say, EIO did not consider that the inquiry's factual investigation would be materially hampered by its decision not to waive privilege. Is that right?
It is right, yes.
Now, we've just established with Mr. Bonehill and looked back again at the questions that were asked of Mr. Bonehill. It was clear to you, wasn't it, there had been a public and lengthy dispute about the accuracy of Mr. Elliott's comments on the advice given to the church. Is that right?
Yes.
And it would be possible, wouldn't it, for this inquiry, this chair and panel, to reach a view about the accuracy of Mr. Elliott's report if it was able to see the unredacted advice?
Yes, I'm sure that is right, but I see a distinction between claiming legal privilege and whether or not a document is, as a matter of fact, privileged.
You're going to have to explain that to me.
Well, what I'm saying is that this document clearly now is not confidential, and therefore it is not privileged.
I'm not sure. Well, I'll pick up on that, and then I'm not sure necessarily that answers my question. Are you saying the only reason we now have this unredacted is because the privilege no longer exists because you'd already given it away? Not because the EIO thinks we should have it unredacted.
Well, it is not privileged because it is, it's lost its confidentiality, and we have always endeavoured to help the inquiry as best we can.
Well, then I'm going to circle back to my original question, which is how can you say that we wouldn't be hampered in our investigation of the facts where it would have been possible to resolve the dispute, or at least seek to resolve the dispute between the church and the EIO, had we received the information?
Yes, well, clearly, if we had had at the forefront of our minds that we had received these tapes and we were aware that the documents were not privileged, we would have provided them to the inquiry. In fact, I think we would have provided them to the inquiry rather sooner than we did.
But again, that's because the horse had already bolted, so to speak, and I appreciate that point. But, and I'm going to ask just one last time about this sentence in your statement, which is how the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office could really reach the view that this inquiry's factual investigation would not be materially hampered by the decision to maintain redactions over those documents?
Well, it's a source of deep regret that these documents were not disclosed sooner.
I'm looking at paragraph 22 of your witness statement and wonder if it's something you'd like to say. When you talk about the EIO's regret, is it right that you now accept that this conduct has made this inquiry's work more difficult?
It is a source of regret that these documents were not disclosed sooner, and that probably would have saved everyone time and effort. So we regret that, and we're very sorry for it.
Okay, just specifically what you say in your witness statement is, the inquiry's work has been made more difficult as a result. It's in your witness statement.
Yes.
Do you accept that sentiment?
I do.
Thank you. Mr. Bonehill, I'm going to move back to you.
Mm-hmm.
We do now have unredacted copies of the correspondence, and I would like to take a look at just some extracts of it.
Okay.
In particular, focusing on that which we heard read out on the telephone call. Can we ask you to turn to tab 8 of your bundle, chair and panel? That's a little bit fiddly to go through. Ralph, can you bring up ACE 027739, starting on page 6? Very much. Now, this is an extract, so we didn't have to disclose the whole thing, of the contact log we looked at a moment ago that was previously covered with the words LPP. Starting on page 6, which is what Ralph has brought up to us, we have an email from the Bishop of Durham to Cheryl Kent on the 15th of January 2015 at 12:33. Nope, going further up, please, Ralph, sorry. Don't write the top half, if we can zoom out. Thank you. Bishop of Durham says, I sent the lawyer's letter to Ecclesiastical as well, but clearly you need to liaise with them. A4 is now corresponding directly with Stephen Platten and Choro. I am unclear that now a solicitor is involved, exactly how we correspond with A4. I don't want to stop doing so, if at all possible. Just above that is the reply, which is from a Mr. Stephen Slack from within the church's legal team, their in-house legal team. And he says, Bishop Paul, Cheryl and Jill may have comments from the wider safeguarding policy point of view, but from a purely legal point of view, I think the position has changed now that a claim has come in. In such a situation, the persons against whom the claim has been made and those acting for them need to have carriage of any correspondence with the claimant because of the potential impacts for the claim of anything said to the claimant. Now, that's the church internal legal advice, yes. And is that what we heard on the telephone call your PR team referring to?
I believe so.
Yeah. Over the page. Please, Ralph, back to page 5 of this document. So we're going backwards, chair and panel. Email from the Bishop of Durham on the 15th of January at 13:01 to Cheryl Kent. Yes, thank you. And Stephen Slack, sorry. Yes, thank you. I suspected that was the case. Presumably, if I write to him explaining this, that would be fine. I also wondered about phoning Dave Greenwood, who I know, who was the representative of A4, to check from his perspective and to ask that he makes plain that not responding will be because of the legal claim having been submitted. Just above that, we again have Stephen Slack from the legal office saying yes to both, but I suggest you await hearing via Cheryl of the London Registrar's or the EIG's view before doing so. Yes? Mm-hmm. Now, the letter of claim was sent to the EIG, we know. I'm leaving there with them saying, better check with the EIG what's going on. Ralph, can we go to page 7 of this document? Now, last time we looked at the email trails over on the top of the page from Michael Angel, and you confirmed my pronunciation of his name.
Yes.
I've passed this to our specialist claims team, etc. Below that, we see the advice from your casualty claims team, an email.
Yeah.
Dear Cheryl, thanks for providing a copy of the letter of claim sent on behalf of A4. The advice you have received is correct. You should not be in any further contact with the claimant as he has now instructed solicitors. And then it goes on about the machinations in relation to it. I'm going to stick with the chronology. You will get to answer a question in a moment. I just want to establish it for everybody because these documents are difficult. Ralph, page 33 of that same document, please. We went through last time Mr. Bonehill, and I'm sure you'll remember, there was a lot of back and forth in the church following that email.
Yes.
Obviously, we didn't see it last time. About, well, not very happy about this, I feel really bad, I'd like to be able to speak to A4. Should we speak to Colin down in Chichester? Colin's done a lot of these.
Yep.
And we will be disclosing a letter. Mr. Perkins has explained what he meant about thrashed this through. Essentially, they had talked about it back when Chichester was dealing with theirs, and he'd agreed with ecclesiastical a position going forward.
Well, I think it's a bit more than that. I think it demonstrates how supportive the ecclesiastical were.
Yeah.
Of supporting the victim through the civil claim process.
That's absolutely right. We will come to Colin's email.
Okay,
just sticking with the chronology for a moment. So we had that tussle backwards and forwards. And then at the bottom of page 33, thank you, Ralph, we've got Colin Perkins emailing back to Paul Butler, Cheryl Kent. He says, essentially, I've got in touch with Paula Jefferson from DAC Beechcroft, who you'd appointed to manage this. She's emailed me, I'm going to speak with her later, and we'll sort this out. I paraphrase.
Yeah.
But that's what he's saying. Over the page to 34, 35. Paula, then, did she not? At the bottom of page 35, we can see an email from Paula Jefferson dated the 29th of January, 15:13, in which she said, over the page to 36, Ralph. We will look at this one also in more detail. It is still possible for there to be offers of pastoral support, but they must be on the same basis as they would for anyone who came seeking such support, irrespective of where any alleged abuse occurred.
Yeah.
Okay? So we can see that the confusion really lasted between the 15th of January and the 29th of January, which is the date of Paula Jefferson's email. Is that right?
Yes.
And is that now representing the bulk of the key correspondence on this matter?
Yes, I think the only thing you haven't seen there, obviously, is the internal legal advice from the Church of England, which I think it's not in there, I don't think, in its entirety.
Well, we had the email from Stephen Slack,
yes,
who said,
you've had that.
Don't have contact with them, but then you better check with EIG what they say about that.
Okay.
Right? I'd like to look behind tab 2 of our bundle in more detail at the email from Cheryl Kent to Ecclesiastical asking for some help.
Yeah.
Ralph, it's EIO000151 at page 2. Just the bottom half, please, Ralph. Happy New Year, etc., etc. Third paragraph. One of the National Church lawyers has advised that now that this claim has been made, we should no longer respond to emails / contact the alleged victim. Can I clarify what Ecclesiastical's viewpoint on this is, please?
Yep.
The question for you is, it's clear from that that she is asking for EIG to be the one to provide clarity about what they should be doing.
Yes.
If the advice from the church lawyers was wrong, should the individual who responded to this email have said, no, that's wrong?
I think the question related, and this is the way we interpreted it, to the civil claim. And on the basis that a civil claim at that stage had been made, then I think the advice we gave in response to the question we were asked was accurate. Could we have gone further and referred specifically to pastoral care? Yes, we could. But that wasn't the question we were asked, I think it's fair to say.
And that is, in fact, the point your PR team were making to Azzaro when they read them this.
Just looking at the evidence, that's what was put to us.
Right. That's not precisely the question I asked. Okay, I'm going to go back to the question I asked. If the advice that the church's internal lawyers had given was wrong, should Ecclesiastical have said that's wrong, this is the correct advice?
If it was wrong, yes.
If the question asked by Cheryl Kent to Ecclesiastical was not sufficiently clear, should Ecclesiastical have clarified what she wanted before providing a response?
Well, I think when we responded to that, we thought it was clear. We wouldn't know what's in Cheryl Kent's mind at that point in time. And we just assumed it related to the civil claim.
So that's the point, isn't it? It was an assumption.
Yes.
It doesn't say relating to the civil claim. It says, should we no longer respond to emails or contact the alleged victim?
But it also makes mention to a letter of claim.
Well, that's because there was one. But
yeah, no, exactly.
But the question doesn't relate to the claim. The question says, should we no longer respond to emails, contact the alleged victim?
Well, I can only repeat what I said. Yeah, that is correct in relation to the civil claim. And on that basis, we responded to the letter.
The response is over the page to page 4, please. Ralph, chair and panel, it's in your bundle if you just turn over leaf. I'd like to look at the second paragraph. This is from your claims handler.
Yeah.
The advice you have received is correct. You should not be in any contact with the complainant as he has now instructed solicitors to represent him. It doesn't say you can't contact the complainant about the claim, does it?
No, and that's the point I made. You know, if we went further, and maybe we should have done that, but at the time we responded to, you know, it was all about the civil claim, unfortunately.
Do you accept that somebody reading this would say, well, shouldn't I have any further contact? So I better not have any contact with the individual.
I can understand that.
Yes. Can you also understand that it would be impossible to provide pastoral support to somebody without having contact with them?
Correct.
Do you think, in your role as the claims director,
yes,
that this advice was good enough or clear enough?
I think we could have gone further in terms of, you know, clarifying that pastoral care could have been provided alongside of the civil claim. And in terms of the civil action, the church should have no contact because A4 is legally represented. So, yes, we could have gone further, but we responded to it, as I've said, on the basis of the civil action alone.
I'm sorry to sound repetitive, but again, the question I asked was, did you think this advice was good enough?
With hindsight, no.
Can we take that down off the screen, please? Now, when the Elliott Review came out and the EIO put out the press statements that we've already looked at,
and
in your evidence even to this inquiry, why didn't anybody just say, well, we've looked at it, the advice wasn't clear enough, it wasn't our intention for them to withdraw pastoral support, but we can see how they would have misunderstood it? Why didn't anybody just say that?
I think that's a fair observation, and I can't answer that.
Because I'm reading from your transcript last time, and what you said is, the only thing you said is, the assertions made in the Elliott Review were inaccurate. We never instructed the church to withdraw pastoral care and support.
And that's factually correct.
But do you think that answer to questions by Miss Golding was sufficiently full and frank?
I think in relation to the question we were asked, yes.
So bearing in mind we'd just been through all of this, and the advice that was given says you should have no contact at all. It doesn't say you can give him pastoral support, but please don't communicate about the claim.
Yep.
Do you think that your evidence in repeatedly saying we never told them to withdraw pastoral support has been sufficiently full and frank to assist this inquiry in its investigation?
Well, I think in terms of the advice we gave to the church, it could have been wider in terms of referencing specifically pastoral care and support. But, you know, it does come back to the question we were asked.
No, I appreciate that, Mr. Brownhill.
You know, at the point in time.
But again, we weren't allowed to disclose the unredacted information,
no, indeed.
So we were asking the questions we were able to ask. So I repeat my question. Do you think, now that we've been through it, your evidence and the ecclesiastical's position on this in general has been sufficiently full and frank?
I think it's been. I think the evidence we gave in response to the point you asked me on was true and frank. Again, responding to the question we would ask, could it have been wider? I think it could have been in terms of the response.
Ralph, can we please bring up the Elliott Review, Chair and Panel? This is in your bundle at tab 7, just one page, INQ000457 at page 8. And I'm going to take a look at paragraph 28. Now, bearing in mind you've repeatedly and publicly called Mr. Elliott's report inaccurate, what it says is, when this information came to the attention of Bishop D, he was instructed by the church's advisers to have no further contact with B and to suspend all communication with him. That is almost exactly, is it not, word for word, what that email we just looked at shows?
Yes. Legal advisers, presumably they mean the church advisers, do they?
Well, no, that's the point.
Yes.
He just said legal advisers throughout, and the advice had been received from Mr. Slack and confirmed by the Ecclesiastical Insurance Office.
Yes.
This is the only passage in which he makes comment of this. It is almost word for word what your email said, and yet Ecclesiastical has repeatedly and publicly called Mr. Elliott's review inaccurate. Do you think that was right?
In terms of the advice we gave, as I've said, I think it could have been wider, but at the time, it's what we were responding to, the question we were being asked at the time.
I'm about to move on, but I'm
sorry.
Only interrupting. Ralph, can we bring up alongside that question, that paragraph, please, the documents that we just had up, which is the email at EIO000151, thank you, 004. You should not be in any further contact with the complainant, is what it says on the right. What Mr. Elliott wrote was advised to have no further contact with B and to suspend all communication with him. My question is it fair then to call Mr. Elliott's comments inaccurate?
I think on reflection, I would accept that.
Thank you. You asked, and it is fair, I will do. We are disclosing the email from Colin Perkins.
Okay,
Colin Perkins was contacted by A4 following your evidence last week, and you were asked questions about an observation. He said that they had thrashed it out with you. He said, essentially, I'm going to paraphrase most of it and read the one important paragraph. He said, yes, we went through all of this at the time, and this panel have heard evidence from Mr. Perkins about the very sophisticated arrangements they put in place to provide pastoral support with the ISVA and the helplines and offering of counselling. And he said, an initial discussion between myself and a member of staff at EIG about this approach raised some questions. This was, looking back, unsurprising. I cannot think of a situation prior to this when a diocese would have learned so many details of an investigation whilst it was ongoing. Our involvement with the police was particularly unique. I did not intend to imply that we had a major struggle with EIG to get them to agree what we had proposed. What I can be clear about is that when we explained our new approach, EIG were entirely supportive and have remained so since. And I'm asked by your representative to make sure that is plain. But that's in relation to what happened in Chichester.
Yes.
The evidence you were called to give last week was about A4.
Yes.
and have it. Do you think, these are my concluding questions, do you think A4, as the victim, should have had to wait or fight as long as he has in order for this to be clarified on the record?
No.
And finally, I want to read directly, if I can, from the guiding principles that you told us about last week from Ecclesiastical. And the first of those guiding principles is that policyholders, I appreciate that's not you, should respond to victims and survivors in such a way that it is not experienced or seen as negative, resistant, or unhelpful, because this can create relationship difficulties and may worsen their well-being. Do you think that in managing this entire issue, Ecclesiastical has lived up to that guiding principle?
I think those guiding principles relate to the civil claim. Could we have done it better? Yes, I accept that point.
I appreciate these relate to the civil claim. I don't in any way say they're binding on you. But as a statement of principle, it's a good one, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I agree entirely.
And did you think that you lived up to that principle?
I think we could have done better.
Thank you. Chair and panel, that concludes my questions. Do you have any questions for this witness?
Mr. Frank.
Just one question, please. In relation to the tape recordings we've heard about, as I understand it, you had them in September of 2017, is that correct?
That's correct.
Who had them?
We were sent them by A4.
And when you say we, they went into somebody's possession?
Yes, they were sent to our group chief executive's email account.
And how long were they there?
We listened. We knew that they'd been received, and we realised that they were recordings.
Yes, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you. There are no further questions.